and welcome to The Aesthetic Insider. I'm Angela O'Mara, host of The Aesthetic Insider Show. I'm here today with Dr. Lawrence Rifkin, a cosmetic dentist based in Beverly Hills, California. Dr. Rifkin is known for his beautiful celebrity smiles and his unique approach to oral health. Dr. Rifkin, welcome to The Aesthetic Insider Show. It's such a pleasure and an honor to have you here today.
Thank you, Angela. I know we did this a few years ago, and it's really an honor and such a pleasure. So much fun to have you be a host to explore the different aspects of everything that you are actually explaining and providing for the audiences. I'm really going to have a lot of fun here. I hope everybody is enjoying the day. As you can see, we're kind of an outdoor venue today. It's quite warm here, and I'm in LA area, and I'm looking forward to this. There's a lot of topics we can talk about, and you're such an amazing host. I'm going to let you just guide me.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, isn't it fun that we can actually do this from two different, not just two different locations, but two different countries. And so I'm in Mexico, you're in LA, you know, and here we are just both having a beautiful day. And I'm really excited because we have done podcasts in the past, but this is going to be a different podcast because I think there's just so much for us to share and in so many different ways now. But I kind of want to just start out with, you know, let's just talk about celebrity smiles. You know,
okay.
How do they get them? Why is it so important? And then for, you know, those of us out there, you know, we're just intrigued by these, especially the California celebrity smile.
Well, okay. If there is a California celebrity smile, first of all, let me just share with everyone that I am a reconstructive and cosmetic dentist in Beverly Hills. I've been practicing for over 40 years. I have still a tremendous amount of passion for what I do. I have been a student, a teacher, a professor. I've lectured internationally. I have been able to do a number of publications, both to the public and both to my profession and my colleagues. And I have learned a lot, and I think that by me being a continuous student, learning from others, pushing the edge of the envelope forward, so to speak, and applying multiple outside entities and professions combined into what I do, it's helped me in my profession create the process, which I have sort of created for myself, to have predictable, beautiful smiles based upon a foundation of health. And, you know, the celebrity aspect of it is just a part of my practice. The foundation has always been started when I went to USC Dental School in health and function. So I'm known, obviously, for a lot of beautiful smiles and cosmetic work. And I honor that because, in addition, as your audience may or may not know, and you do know, that I am a professional sculptor. I was an art major in college before I was a dentist. And I was also a musician. So I kind of have this creative bug inside me, and I love applying all of that to my profession of dentistry. And I like to make it fun. So I hope your audience is going to have fun with this little bit of conversation, hopefully it's a little bit unique, not too academic, but I'm going to share a lot of details if I think it's helpful to them to know. So my early start with, I guess, celebrity clients, I was out in practice probably for about 10 years, and I had the fortune of meeting some wonderful patients that were either producers and they had referred to me because they evidently liked my work and they saw a need for their celebrity clients in their movies and their musicians to have their smile be a part and reflection of who they are and their persona. So I don't know if some of your audience may not even know these names. Of course, one of my early clients was Frank Sinatra. Most people know who he was.
Most people know who Frank
Sinatra is. I think they do. Anne Margaret, who's just, they're all wonderful people, honestly. You get to know them. You see them as superstars, but I get to see them in an environment where they're truly natural and human. And obviously we all are. I've seen George Hamilton, David Carradine, who's now passed, obviously with Frank Sinatra. But so many others I probably will forget myself. I also had the fortune and opportunity, because I like sports and athletics, I became the team dentist for the Los Angeles Lakers in the 80s. And so I was able to see athletes that were in need of health and creating a nice smile and persona for them too. So that was my early start. And when the concept of teeth whitening first came out, and that was actually earlier in the 50s, and then the process has changed, we became more fluent and more, more frequently do we try to improve smiles with just whitening teeth. You know, people used to smoke and drink and had a lot of staining of their teeth. And so whitening obviously is a great, easy way to freshen up your smile. And the next step in celebrity dentistry or cosmetic dentistry was the advent of bonding and then porcelain veneers. So I was one of the early users, and I guess I'm not going to say I'm an innovator, but I was very involved with designing and seeing how veneers would work, porcelain veneers. And this was probably in the 70s. And so a lot of experience with porcelain veneers early on with some of the laboratories that I worked with. And one of the few people that were courageous enough to try something new. It was an alternative to doing full crown coverage on teeth. And even in those days, we did not have sophisticated porcelains. We had it baked on gold. And it looked better, but not great, okay? But the porcelain veneers were actually an amazing concept that I was a little bit leery, and we all were. We didn't know if it would work. I had a dental assistant that had severe tetracycline dark teeth. And she says, Dr. Rifkin, please, please, please put crowns on my teeth. I can't go out. I can't get a date. I can't. She's a pretty girl, but she just had this really dark tetracycline staining. And I said, gosh, I feel so terrible professionally cutting down healthy teeth to put full crowns on them, even though I'm incredibly minimally invasive, I suppose. So I said, well, why don't we try the veneers? If you're really committed to having crowns, let's try the veneers. We have nothing to lose, and see if that would be a better, more conservative way to do it. And lo and behold, it actually worked. I was shocked. And she still has those veneers today. It's unbelievable.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I actually have two veneers myself on my lateral incisors. They've been there for almost 40 years. And maybe I'm lucky, but most veneers, they say, last 10, 15 years. Mine, fortunately, since I've been in practice long enough, I see patients that I've had for 30, 40 years sometimes, and they're still there. And done properly with the right case selection, you can get great results and long-term predictability. And the porcelains today and the ceramics have gotten better and better and better. So that's just the material side of it and why cosmetic dentistry has been so popular, and it's grown and grown and grown. And of course, now with the internet, social media has now been able to promote and educate the public into what cosmetic dentistry could be, should be, and maybe shouldn't be as well, because I have my feelings about that. I'm always, my foundation is based upon integrity of health for the patient, what I would do for my own self or my own family. And so today, social media has been able to promote a lot of the celebrities. You can see celebrity smiles. You can see the doctors that are showing their before and afters, as do I. And I think it's great. I think sometimes it has the potential for over-treatment. As an artist who's traveled and studied in Europe, sculpting and things like that, I happen to prefer a very natural, undetectable smile that's beautified. When we see the unattractive, obvious chiclet type of porcelain veneers or patients that just should have had some teeth whitening done, I think that I want to motivate my colleagues in my profession to do the right thing always and not be greedy. I hate to use that word. I don't think some of them are. I think they maybe truly believe they're doing a benefit, but I think there are alternatives. So that being said, with that type of history of celebrities that I have been able to see because of my associations with other producers, just by happenstance, being a celebrity dentist for the Los Angeles Lakers. And then, sorry about the airplane going by. Nature. It's nature. We're loving it.
I just want to jump in as well on the celebrity side of things, too, because you talk about, you know, from the early days of celebrities who you worked on and how you made these connections. And one of the things that you did just mention, which I think is really key to the whole thing, is the foundation of health and the form and function of dentistry. And I kind of feel what I say, like the California celebrity smile, the Farrah Fawcett smile, you know, that type of thing is, I really think over the years, what it has brought about is the importance of oral health, like in the big picture, you know? And so I think the celebrity smile is more than just, like you said, it's more than the teeth. It's just what it represents, and the gorgeous, like I said, celebrity smile, it represents a person who looks healthy, a person who looks happy, you know, a person who looks like they're doing well in life. And so I think it's significant of so many other things that go beyond having your teeth fixed. Would you say that? Would you agree with that?
Oh, I 1,000% agree. You know, my recent push, along with working with cosmetic surgeons and others to complete the smile, as you said, it's not just teeth. Yeah. Teeth, tissue, lips, the whole face, the function, muscle function, using neuromodulators, fillers, and how we can actually surgically and non-surgically treat patients. The foundation of health is absolutely the most important thing of all. You know, I could go into this, and I probably shall in a second, the interrelationship between oral and systemic health, okay? But when patients become, and celebrities become, a little bit more astute, they see more varieties, they now become they're very selective of who they like and who they want to see, and that's good, because we should be showing our before and afters and get multiple consultations. You know, some of my more recent celebrity clients, which I'm very fortunate to have, our patients, you know, they're not the older ones, the older generation. It's been a continuum. I have like Chrissy Teigen and John Legend, and I mention them only because they are so into health. They're very smart and wonderful people.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves, a major celebrity and the most kind person that I know. Doc Lawrence Fishburne, another amazing human being. Becky G. Now, here's the thing: when I talk about celebrity smiles, in some of the designs, not only is it the foundation of health, but maintaining the persona. So, yeah. You know, Lawrence Fishburne, he has the gap between his teeth, and people like Madonna and others. Becky G is a very, very new pop celebrity singer and performer. She's so adorable. And she could have had her teeth straightened and closed the gaps and everything. But like I said, not everything needs to be perfectly straight and lined up like chiclets, like piano keys. And I search and just support patients, clients, whether they're celebrity or not, to maintain their unique persona. I always use the example of Cindy Crawford. Without her mole, would still be beautiful, but she wouldn't be Cindy Crawford.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you look at the Cindy Crawford model is today. So I'm fortunate enough to see more educated patients and those that really appreciate a natural smile without doing it. And also, as you just the prelude was the foundation of health. So how do we achieve healthy mouths? The healthy mouth leads to the healthy body, because the body can absorb bacteria through the gum tissue. You swallow saliva. I have a whole protocol on how you should brush, floss, and use a mouthwash. And if anybody wants to go to my Instagram later, they can see me performing how I do my regimen of oral hygiene. But the things that we can do restorative.
In a nutshell, can you cover the oral hygiene?
Okay, so we know that there are all kinds of diseases that that occur that we are in contact with through the air, through what we eat or drink. And so we have to be conscious of basic good sanitation and not infection control. That means that we don't transfer from A to B, a bacteria, virus, or microbe. So the logical thing, and this came about through the COVID time when we were off, so I started to think more deeply how I can help my patients, educate my patients on flossing, brushing, and what are the benefits. So basically, you want to eliminate most of the bacteria as much as possible, kill as much as possible the bad bacteria in your mouth so that you don't absorb them into your bloodstream, because many systemic diseases are related, like heart disease. You can have a stroke based upon the bacteria growing in your arteries and then cause an embolism. And that basically is a blood clot, and you can have many, many problems from that, from a heart attack to embolism. So what do? So we want to keep the bacteria out of our mouths by proper flossing, proper brushing. You need to know the anatomy of the gum tissue where it wraps around the tooth, and you have to clean between the gum tissue and the tooth. And that's a little bit of training, and that's like anything else. You can give me the greatest guitar in the world, and I'm not Eric Clapton, okay? I have to have some training.
Okay.
So taking the bristles correctly, doing the flossing correctly, and then using a mouthwash, which will kill the residual bacteria that you were not able to mechanically remove. And one that I recommend, which is not a brand, it should have two basic ingredients. One is anti-cavity, which would be fluoride, the mouthwash. Uh-huh. And the other ingredient, which I prefer, would be a hydrogen peroxide. not the non-alcohol. Alcohol in a mouthwash will kill bacteria, but it can be drying to the mouth, which also may indicate some more decay. And it also can be a precursor to oral cancer. So I would say if you had the two best choices, it would be hydrogen peroxide and fluoride. So the sequence would be the following. I'm going to do it really quickly because you asked me to do it quickly, and then they can go review it on my Instagram. So the first thing you want to do is wash your hands before you put your hands in your mouth. You want to take out your toothbrush and prepare it with a cap full of mouthwash. You stick your brush into the mouthwash cap. You prepare, set that to the side. You put your toothpaste on the toothbrush. Then you pick up the dental floss and you floss inside your mouth. Then you have to know how to do that correctly. Your dentist or dental hygienist should be able to show you the proper technique. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. After you've flossed everything, then you pick up your toothbrush and you brush with your toothbrush the proper way underneath the gum tissue for a couple of minutes. And then you rinse that off, you spit that out. And then because you've now recontaminated your toothbrush with bacteria in your mouth, you must sanitize it by dipping it in the mouthwash. So the hydrogen peroxide will kill the bacteria. Then you take the residual mouthwash and you swish it through your teeth, gargle under your tongue everywhere you can for about 30 seconds. And then that's the most anybody could really do to clean the teeth. Now, the last couple of steps would be that after you've had your hands in your mouth and you've contaminated your fingers, why not just wash your hands?
Yes.
And then put your toothbrush away. And this may sound a little bit gross. Keep it at least 6 feet away from your toilet. And when you flush the toilet, put the lid down, okay? Because they've shown that aerosols can contaminate the air. So I think that's the most anybody could do with their own personal oral hygiene. One last little note about that. Everybody should, the last time you should be brushing and flossing your teeth would be before you go to bed. And there's a reason why. You want to know why?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because when we lie down, okay, we tend to aspirate or inhale saliva into our lungs. And so when you do that, if your mouth or your saliva is contaminated, you have not brushed or you have not reduced the amount of microbes, bacteria, viruses, you're now infecting or inoculating your lung tissue with bacteria from your mouth because you're inhaling that saliva. Super, super important since the time of COVID. We know that there's a number of respiratory diseases, pneumonia, RSV, obviously the COVID and other bacteria that or viruses that can cause us to have lung.
You know, that's fantastic. And thank you so much for doing that. You know, one of the things I'm reading a lot about now is the importance of the microbiome on the human, just on our health. And of course, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of the mouth is the entryway to the outside world.
I say it's the greatest portal.
I haven't even thought about it that way, but it really is. It's like it's the only entry to the outside world. And there's a lot of contaminants and toxins and all kinds of things out there. And so, of course, the importance of cleansing the mouth is becoming, I think, even more important to people who are concerned about foundational health. Is there anything that you would also add in there in terms of, and this is going off track a little bit, and I do want to get back to celebrities and collaboration, all kinds of things, but, you know, is there anything with foods that, you know, certain foods tend to need a little bit more flossing or a little bit more cleaning, or, you know, making sure?
That's a great question. Obviously, nutrition, other than its obviously biochemical benefits or detriment to our bodies, what we're eating, certain types of food will support the bacteria that will cause tooth decay and periodontitis. Okay, gingivitis, periodontitis. That just means the gums and the bony tissue around the roots are being fed by the food that we eat, especially during the period of time that you're not brushing them or you're sleeping with them in your mouth. So yes, so carbohydrates and sugars are obviously the greatest offenders. Okay. There are certain types that lactobacillus and strep mutans are the two types of bacteria. I used to say this a long time ago in early oral hygiene to my patients, especially mothers with kids that are sharing food. You're sharing food and you're inoculating your own child with the bacteria that's in your mouth. So you need to be careful about that.
Yeah.
And you need to reduce the amount of sugars and carbohydrates, or if you're going to eat them, and which we are, you can't stop all of it. Just rinse your mouth out as fast as possible. Brush your teeth as fast as possible. The studies show that within 20 minutes, the greatest acid production by the bacteria are actually causing the problems with the gum inflammation, the reaction to that, and also decay that breaks down the enamel and tooth structure. I always like to, I try to motivate my patients and say, look, you eat food, I eat food, we process our food, and we eliminate by going to the restroom. The bacteria use your mouth as the restroom or the toilet. And so if that doesn't visually give them a gross picture.
No, we want it to be the opposite. It's clean when it goes in, and it is what it is when it comes out.
That's right. So bacteria have no choice. That's where they eat. That's where they go.
Yes.
So it's very, very important. This is a very strong focus that I have in my career right now. Obviously, I've always, I will always be into the restorative part of it. I'm into the cosmetic part of it. And another aspect of health, since we're on this subject, to reduce the amount of bacteria is not just what you eat, which is important. It's not just how your oral hygiene is, but it's also, are you able to clean your teeth? So how does that work? First of all, crowded teeth that are crooked like this, it's harder to floss. And when a dentist creates a restoration could be a filling, could be an inlay, a crown, a veneer. If the fit, the seam, the attachment edge where the tooth and the restoration come together, it should be as small as possible because bacteria are about 4 to 7 microns. Yes. A human hair, just to give you a reference, a human hair, which I'm missing a few, is about 100 microns in diameter. That's quite small, but think about a bacteria that's 1/10 that size.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So if you have a tooth that has gum tissue 360 degrees around it, like a moat, okay, you have a conga line of bacteria swimming at whatever depth of your pockets, and that's what we measure pockets, causing all of this potential damage over time. It's not instant, but it does cause damage. That's why we get cavities, we get gum recession, we get bone loss, we get infections, we get systemic disease based upon the bacteria going in our mouth. So what does that mean now? So when I or a dentist creates a restoration, a seam has to be as tight and perfect as possible. That means that every step from beginning to end of how I might sand a tooth or just shape it to receive a veneer and take an impression of it, that every part of that has to be precise and should be minimally invasive. So I use a microscope, a dental operating microscope. As you probably know, I was a founding member of a group called AMED, Academy for Microscope Enhanced Dentistry. 2017, I became the president. And it's so important that we use magnification illumination for the human eye to create restorations that fit so tightly that you reduce the amount of bacteria at the edge. You don't want to have a rough edge. You don't want to have a thick edge. You don't want to have a short edge. All of that creates harbors for bacteria.
Yes.
And so the laboratory, so when you choose a dentist, when your audience chooses a dentist, you should ask them, are they using any microscopic techniques? Are they using any magnification such as loops? Loops are a very good entry level. They go up to about 8 power. A microscope, dental operating microscope, which is easy for the patient, doesn't go in the mouth, goes up to 20 times X or 20X. So it's 2 to 3 times more than the average loop. So the laboratory has to use that when they fit these little parts together. That reduces the bacteria. So that is part of oral hygiene. Precision is very, very important.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that you're fitting two things together, right? The original tooth and then the porcelain veneer, so that there can be a gap. Otherwise, the tooth becomes not infected, but at least it becomes inflamed with microscopic germs and things. So
exactly, and so that's why it's important to be minimally invasive. To see better, you can diagnose better. You can see cracks and decay and little parts that need maybe attention. At a higher magnification, you cannot see that with just the naked eye. And sometimes you can't even see it with the high-powered loops. So that's important. You know, where I started learning this, Angela, was in my lecturing. So I would take a slide before we had digital cameras, and we would project it on a big room in a big sky, big room in a big screen, and all of a sudden, my little tooth that's like 10 millimeters wide is now 50 feet wide.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm saying, wow. So that was my best teacher, is my photography and my lecture, because I could see and evaluate and critique my own work to get better and better and better. And so, the foundation of oral health, oral hygiene is so important. I haven't even touched on all of more of the systemic diseases and problems that can come from that. Yeah. But I'm glad you mentioned that.
But I think at least now that we're talking about it, it is something for our viewers and listeners to consider is, it may be for appearance's sake or, that your teeth don't perhaps look to you as great as they can, or they could be if you had a cosmetic dentistry. But would you recommend that before anyone kind of undergoes any kind of cosmetic treatment that they really do have their mouth evaluated, their teeth evaluated, to just check on the level of hygiene that they have, get them on a plan, get whatever cleaned up before before they finally have the cosmetic work? Is that how you would approach it?
Even if you didn't want cosmetic work, or especially if you want cosmetic work, yes, there's additional aspects to being getting some cosmetic work done. But I always recommend to my patients, depending upon their own personal hygiene and their particular mouth, you need to see the dentist at least twice a year. That means the hygienist and the dentist. Most of us need our teeth cleaned every 3 months or four times a year. So in my protocol for my patients to keep them super healthy and be on top of some other things like oral cancer, that's a really, really important topic that we should talk about. 1 second, is that you need to come in and have your pockets measured to determine whether you can keep your mouth clean, whether we can measure improvement of your oral health. I give my patients now a report card. I try to identify and show them, visualize them, teach them, and then have something to take home with them. You know, it's easy to sit there and get your teeth cleaned. It's relaxing, and then go home and forget about whatever the hygienist or the dentist said. So I give them a report card. I'm trying to be a good teacher because I've had good teachers.
Go home, you have dinner, and then you don't brush your teeth before bed, right? Because you just got them cleaned by the oral hygienist.
Exactly. And then the other part of it is, like I said, the oral cancer. You know, dentists can do a lot to improve your health and your function and your smile and your self-esteem. They can also be the entry level of diagnostics for life-threatening diseases such as oral cancer, which can be not only life-threatening, as I said, but debilitating or disfiguring. Patients have lost their entire half of their face because of oral cancer. And when we early detection, like anything else, means early treatment means much, much better outcomes. Sometimes you might even call it a cure. So your hygienist and dentist must be looking at your mouth, your tongue, underneath the tongue, the roof, the throat, feeling lymph nodes and salivary glands in your throat along in here and doing a very thorough examination. So forgetting at the moment the cosmetics, if you did nothing else, be healthy, stay alive, do everything that you can to improve your own self-care. And some of the self-care means you need a professional to evaluate that. So that's an important aspect of health. And of course, before I start any cosmetic case, my patients have to show me, demonstrate to me, and I will help them be that person to maintain and keep these restorations and cosmetic work for the maximum longevity. Because, you know, you spend literally sometimes thousands of dollars, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars for veneers and restorations. You certainly don't want to throw that away by not taking good care of them. And you want to have a dentist that makes them well, does a good job on them.
Well, it's like if you want perfect teeth, but you want to have perfect health as well.
So yes.
Yeah. You know, I do want to go back a little bit to celebrity smiles and not necessarily the celebrity smile, like I said, the, you know, California smile, but the your work with the film industry in terms of the special effects work that you've done. Like I know there's certain things, and you mentioned Lawrence Fishburne, and I know he was in a movie and you created some kind of amazing prosthetic for him to be a character that was so well known with a certain smile, but that, you know, he didn't want to have to touch his own teeth in order to play that character and to be so convincing. Can we just talk a little bit about the fun side, the special effects?
Oh yeah, that is a fun side. Okay, so I would say, well, I can't say some names, but I can say others. So Lawrence Fishburne is certainly open for me discussing this, as well as Ed Helms in the movie The Hangover. So I'm going to talk about both of those really quickly. So Lawrence Fishburne, since you mentioned him first, he was doing a movie on Nelson Mandela, you know, the president in South Africa. And the movie's name was Madiba. I think it was a series, like three or four parts, Madiba. And so Lawrence Fishburne obviously has his natural gap between his teeth, but Nelson Mandela did not. So he went to South Africa to perform and film this movie. And he says, what can we do? Can we create this image so that I don't have, how can I close this gap without doing anything permanently? Because I like my gap. And I said, I like it too. It's you, you know? So we created multiple little prostheses that he could just sort of snap on, minimal retention. He could take them in and out whenever he wanted to. So he did the scenes when he was doing Madiba. And so I said, this is kind of, he said, well, how long are you going to be gone? He says, well, it should take about 3-4 months to do the movie. And I said, well, what would you like? You want two of these things? He says, oh no. He says, because number one, if they stop the filming because I've lost it or it breaks, I need to have a backup right now because they can lose hundreds of thousands of dollars per day building a movie. And I said, and he said, and shipping it, you don't know whether it's going to be there in one day or 5 days. So I think I made about 8 sets and I was ready to make more. I said, God, I hope that's enough. He said, that's what I want. And so we did. And he did the movie and it looked great. And that's also, there's some examples and photographs of that case on my Instagram. The other one, which is really fun, and I just kind of posted this because Ed Helms posted his own kind of scene of what happened to him, how he, in the first movie, The Hangover, if you all recall that or just see it because it's a hilarious movie, he got accidentally overdosed on some drug, roofies or whatever it was at the time in the movie, in the bachelor party in Las Vegas. And the scene was that he got so crazy wild, he pulled out one of his own tooth because he was a dentist as the character. And so, and he wakes up one morning with chickens around him and he's missing a tooth. So he said, well, how can we do this? He had an idea with, I think Todd Phillips was a producer. How can we do it? Because I don't want to put black wax or make something that will look phony on camera. And fortunately he said, I don't like this crown on my implant. I have a dental implant that was placed back east many years ago. And I want to do some other cosmetic work. But before that, what can we do? I said, well, you know what? Let me take a look. I unscrewed and took off the crown that was on the implant and placed a very healthy gingival kind of replica of what gum tissue would look like without a tooth. And so during the movie, he didn't have that crown from the implant, and he had some removable appliances that he could wear to be social during the, again, 3-4 months of the movie filming. And then when he was done, I created a brand new beautiful crown that looked better and some other cosmetic work of his other teeth. And that was a fun experience for me. And I actually have credits in the end of the movie. There's my name.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's amazing.
That was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have done other things. I've been fortunate enough to go to on set to recement some temporaries for some of my celebrity clients when they needed to, if something came off, and fix some. So, you know, you got to go through the security guard and they got to say who you are, what are you doing, and you go to the trailers and all that. So I've been blessed. I've been lucky to have some patients that made dentistry even more fun, another layer of it. And of course, there are some other things that I do, like Hollywood Smiles, Snap-on Smiles, change their smile for a movie to being a character. Okay. Not so much the Halloween things, but I've done that too.
No, the things that we really want to look at, Petit. You mentioned earlier that we get social media, and of course, you know, it's not just, you know, lots of more dentists are showing their results, which is encouraging more people to look at their own smiles. But it's also, I think, is, you know, people, lots of things within the aesthetic surgery and non-surgical aspects of the aesthetic industry have really kind of grown exponentially in recent years, and a lot to do with people, you know, seeing themselves on social media, you know, Zoom meetings, you know, selfies and all of this. I have done a little bit of research on some of the aspects of other work that you have done within the entertainment and modeling industry. And one which I think I know is, I read about, is on the creating a perfect smile with minimal things based on shadowing. And so when a person has a light on them, or they're not lit the correct way, they look perfect, they smile on one tooth, could appear to be missing, even though it's there, just because of camera lighting and shadowing. So for our viewers, listeners, is there any tips you can give them to just kind of create that great smile, or any work that you have done in fixing something that is so minor, but appears to be so major if you are in front of the camera quite often?
Absolutely. So that's a good lead into what I would create, what I call my algorithm for a beautiful smile. First of all, you have to look at things like I look at when I make a sculpture. I have to look at it some 360 degrees over, under, like a drone, and every different angle. Yes. Because especially celebrities, they get this harsh lighting, lateral lighting. And what might look okay in normal lighting looks worse with harsh lighting, with creating shadows. Yes. So lighting is very important. So when teeth are usually have a shadow or two, it's usually because of their position relative to one another. So one tooth is behind the other, one way or another. It creates a shadow for the tooth behind it. So my patients, when I do it diagnostically for cosmetics or any patient, I take a full macroscopic, which means I look at their face in multiple views, standard sizing and standard positions. I look at frontal, I look at three-quarter views, and I look at profile views, to see what shows socially, what would show on camera. My flash will identify, or just normal lighting will identify, like you said, shadows. And then we come up with what is the problem or problems. And this will also lead into my relationship with understanding and teaching and learning from cosmetic surgeons and dermatologists and injectors and all that. So when we look at things and we can analyze it and we understand the face, and I understand the face because of my years in sculpting. So I could tell you that the face is divided in upper, middle, lower thirds. It's 5 eye widths wide. The lower third of the face is also divided into thirds. And most doctors don't know because they don't get it in school. I've had to study this and look at my own patients, that the upper lip is usually between, in a youthful smile before we get older, and that's another topic, 18 to 22 millimeters. So I have a lot of patients that come to me, they either overfill their lips or they're aged and they don't show teeth anymore. So some of them could benefit from maybe a surgical procedure of an upper lip lift by a surgeon. I say, your teeth are fine. It's your upper lip that's the problem. Or your teeth are out of alignment, so you should see an orthodontist and maybe get your teeth white. So the minimal treatments would be whitening, maybe some orthodontics, so that you don't have to sand just even minimally the surface of the teeth and put veneers on them. But veneers can be really minimally invasive and very, very helpful and last a long time given the right patient and the right environment. So there's a lot of factors that add into this. And so how you asked me the question, what about the shadowing? Sometimes it's orthodontics to move the tooth back out into the light and be level with the other tooth. Or sometimes it is a veneer.
Okay.
Remember, when you move teeth, you also change the upper lower relationship for the bite. So you have to go to someone that understands occlusion, which is the bite, and it's either an orthodontist or a dentist that works with this all the time. The rest of it, as we go into the face and trying to make decisions of what to do or what not to do, this is really important. I have a lot of patients that have had veneers made too long because their lips were too long, and now they can't speak as well and they can't bite as well, and veneers are popping off. So without understanding what the facial format should be, what the surrounding environment of the teeth should be, you might be making the wrong decision, or there are better solutions. So a couple of my colleagues have sent me patients for either what we call a little gingival lifting because they have a gummy smile. So there's a gummy smile scenario.
Okay.
There's really long, which is a short upper lip. You have the opposite, which is a long upper lip, and that happens to many of us because our faces, as they age, and this is my new topic I'm going to be lecturing for, is how the actual skull bones change as we age. Muscles have an impact on the bones, so our cheekbones start to recede. Our lower jaw tends to get a little bit flatter and kind of comes forward. Our mouth collapses, so the lower third of our face starts to get shorter. And that's what, if you look at elderly people, whether we love them or not, we don't care. I love them anyway. They don't have to have perfect 18-year-old faces.
Yes.
But there are some things that are blemishes. And so I've created an algorithm to make decisions on what to do with a gummy smile, what to do with teeth that don't show. Is it the teeth or is it the lip? What to do when you're over-injected with too much fillers, which I do, and as well as use neuromodulators like Botox and things to reduce clenching or gummy smile lip lifting. There's a whole host in our toolbox now between cosmetic dentistry and cosmetic surgery to create the optimal smile. Because like you said, you led into it. It's not just the teeth. Gum tissue has to be symmetrical. Faces, lips have to be symmetrical, or at least relatively symmetrical. And I love that aspect. This is the other part of my career, my profession right now, in addition to oral health, that I love helping other doctors and myself make the better decision of what to do cosmetically. They don't need me, they'll see the surgeon. They don't need the surgeon, you need me or someone like me. Sometimes you need both of us. So...
You know, and I'm glad that we've kind of got to that point, because I was actually having a conversation with somebody in Beverly Hills recently, and it was about, and I asked about what's changed in Beverly Hills, and which I think has also changed on a global level within the medical aesthetic industry. And what he said was collaboration, that he feels there's so much more collaboration now between different specialties. So between the plastic surgeons, facial plastic surgeons, dermatologists, cosmetic surgeons, dentists, oral maxio, you know, I mean, and some of these are terms I'm saying that for non-medical people may not make sense, but for those viewers out there, it is really important that this collaboration has taken place, and that there's such now camaraderie, if you will, about the team that it takes to really get the best result for the aging face. And so I do want to go there with you. Like, how did you kind of first begin to become part of this big collaborative movement that has taken place and is continuing to evolve in medical aesthetics.
Okay, great. You know, that's another sort of benchmark for me in my career. When I was lecturing on smiles and veneers, bleaching, I got a call, as I lectured quite a lot, especially in the past, I got a call from the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery. Hmm. So they said, hey, would you mind giving we've heard about you. We know you're into smiles and you're an artist, and could you please consider being a lecturer? And I said, absolutely. So this was in Colorado, probably 20 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. I said, fantastic. I would love to do that. Be honored. Thank you so much for asking me. I said, what would you like me to talk about? Bleaching, veneers? They said, no. I said, we don't want that. I said, well, that's interesting. Well, what would you like? What is the topic and the focus of your meeting this time? They said, it's on liposuction and fat transfer. And I go, okay. So I scratched my head. I said, do you know I'm a dentist? I'm not a cosmetic surgeon. They said, yes, but you're a sculptor. And I said, yeah. They said, we would like to get the artist's perspective of the human form and what makes a form more beautiful or less beautiful. So I started looking. I said, wow, that's great. So I started going into my sculpture and art books and other things about beauty. And I started looking at line and form and looking at why they do liposuction and why we don't like this little hump on our sides or on our thighs and what we're trying to achieve. So I started getting into the photography to analyze the body, to look at the body and say, this is whether you weigh 110 pounds or 180 pounds, you can still be beautiful. Okay. It's more about composition and harmony and the flow of lines. And that's why we idolize our youth. Why is that? There's a Nobel Prize winner named Konrad Lorenz back, I think it's in the 50s. They got a Nobel Prize for saying, what is the definition of beauty? Is the definition of beauty is basically our attachment and our love for our youth, because youthful babies and young people have smooth skin, full skin, no wrinkles, okay, big eyes and full lips, and all of that put together is what we adore, we think is beautiful, because our children are so beautiful to us. I mean, a baby hippo is cute, right? Baby mm-hmm. elephant. I mean, any kind of animal in their infant stage is
beautiful.
So that was a definition of beauty. And I said, that's what we should be striving for a little bit, okay? Not that we can't appreciate the aging face. And also, when I was in college, I studied anthropology. So I was looking at skulls of different primitive peoples and seeing how they changed from youthful to age skulls that they had found, and seeing all the measurements that changed in the human form over time. So that's how I started getting into cosmetic surgery. So I was also, once I gave my lecture, I was sitting there enthralled with all the other aspects of cosmetic surgery and treatments that these other surgeons, beautifully done artistic surgeons, were doing to help patients. And so I started becoming a member. I was the only dentist, and probably still am, of the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery, the California Academy of Cosmetic Surgery. And I have been honored by you. If I can do a shout out to you, Angela, you have been so instrumental in collaborating this team approach. And I've been honored to lecture to your group of the LAMCA group, which has dentistry involved with injectors, involved with safety anatomy lessons, with cosmetic surgery of everything, the face, the body, et cetera, because we learn from each other. And I always say that I need to be an expert in everything, but not be them. I just need to do what I can do, but I need to know what's done. You know, another maybe metaphor might be before you can play rock and roll or jazz, you need to be able to play classical. You need to have command of all of the keys.
Yes.
So I would say the more we learn from one another, the better the patients benefit from our knowledge.
Yeah. And I think as well is kind of the same is true now for those plastic surgeons, facial plastics, and all the non-dental medical specialties, that they have a much more clearer understanding of the importance of the teeth and the oral area during a facelift. You know, I mean, it's like you can create this beautiful face, but then a person smiles and their teeth are crooked, or their oral hygiene is not good. It's like, you know, it's just a really great, I think, collaboration that benefits the patient, both, you know, immediately and long term. So no, well, kudos to you. I'm really, really happy about that, how that's grown, and excited to see how these specialties continue with this evolution of bringing just the best in aesthetics. Now, you mentioned a couple of times your sculpting, and I know you're a fabulous sculptor and a professional sculptor. So, and that began from a very early age, and leading to today, and the finesse in your work is it all just goes hand in hand.
It does. It's not about, speaking of the hands, it's not just the hands. It's really the vision. You know, all of us can write our name, drive a car, throw a ball. We have the physical coordination.
Yeah.
And either when I was a student in art or when I was teaching art, there is a methodology. You know, Angela or anybody in the audience, you could learn to be artistic. Okay. You may not be the greatest artist in the world, but there are certain tricks to it. Like everything could be broken down into a geometric shape. And so the learning of the language of art that I had in college before I was thinking about dentistry helps me see a face, a smile, a body, a sculpture, whatever it might be, and really truly see it. Looking is not seeing. Seeing is really identifying it, looking to relationships, contextualism, the relationship between the teeth becomes the lips and the face and all of that. All of that's super, super important when you are considering the body as a medium of art.
Yes.
We're going to make adjustments and changes, which we can do so well today. I mean, it's really grown in the last 20 years. It's just amazing how many innovations and beautification procedures can be done. It's not just reconstruction of somebody's face because they were in an accident or in the military. We can now beautify and postpone aging to some degree. So that sculpting experience that I had in college, welding, woodworking, everything. I learned how to measure twice and cut once, as that my teachers used to say. And the precision aspect of the microscope. So being a dentist, so I have to see things microscopically and macroscopically. I have to see the whole composition. It's not just one thing. It's called Gestalt. That's a German psychological term for seeing the entire object as one unified composition, rather than just say, well, there's an eye here and there's an eye here, and it all works together. Everything, the lighting, the background, the foreground, the background, all of that works together. You need to see like an artist. You need to use lighting and have photography skills, and you have to have the visionary skills of an artist to be able to treatment plan what's good, what's bad, what could be improved, and maybe you should leave it alone. So my sculpting has hugely impacted my cosmetic dentistry. And it's hugely impacted my ability to work with my colleagues in cosmetic surgery to understand what they're looking at and try to collaborate. And that's why I also, in the last 10, 15 years, have created a little drawing and sculpting class for surgeons, for dentists, for dental laboratory technicians, to be able to work together to get your skills of vision together as well as your drawing skills. Because if you can draw it, you can sculpt it. Sculpture is just a matter of thousands of drawings.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where my sculpting came in, and I'm still very passionate about it. I'm still sculpting, and it's such a great creative process. It's amazing.
It's wonderful that it is all just come full circle for you in your career. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, what you started with was with the sculpting, and before you made the decision to go into dentistry, and I'm sure dentistry was always, you know, kind of in your mind somewhere, but you began with art, and then you've incorporated this into your life in every manner, and now you're still doing it. It's wonderful.
You know, I won't stop doing dentistry, and I won't stop doing sculpting. I may tip the scale of doing a little less dentistry, a little bit more sculpting, but I'm always going to be there because it's so gratifying to see patients' responses to their self-esteem. I can look at a beautiful sculpture and go to the art museum and say, well, isn't that beautiful? But if you can wear a piece of artwork 24/7 and it makes you feel good about yourself, it's a huge emotional boost. And it doesn't have to be extensive dental work or surgery or anything. Just do what's necessary or what's beneficial. Yeah, so
it's amazing, and we could go on for days and have so many different podcasts on all of these things, but at this particular time, is there anything that you'd really like to share with our audience in terms of kind of where we began with this podcast, you know, from the celebrity aspects to the collaboration to now the creative side of things? Is there anything you'd really like to share with our audience before we sign off today?
maybe somewhat of a summary that, because there's a lot that we talked about. So the most important aspect of it is obviously health, both physically, biologically, and psychologically. So cosmetic dentistry has a huge impact on your self-esteem, some of those, okay? Some more than others. The foundation of health is always important, from seeing your dentist, hygienist at least twice a year and preferably four times a year, especially for oral cancer screening, learning how to brush and floss and use mouthwashes and reduce the amount of microbes in your mouth, which also translates into your body. There is no separation. And understand that there are minimal treatments and there are treatments that may require more extensive work, but it should be done by someone that's experienced, someone that has the ability to perform work with precision and macroscopic global artistic ability. And that's not just me. I'm not just tooting my own horn or anything. There are people that have a lot more experience than others. When you look, I think some of the mistakes that I see on social media, because it's become such a powerful communication tool, is that if you see it before and after, and they all start to look the same, then perhaps the dentist and the technician are not collaborating with the patient to say, I want these teeth to look like you, and I don't want anybody else on the planet to know you had anything done. And if you don't show, if a doctor doesn't show honest, what's the word, depictions of what the before and after is, like, let's say, for example, they don't show the gum tissue, they just show teeth and a smile, you don't know whether that gum tissue is healthy or not. And not being a dentist, you probably have a more difficult time of seeing inflammation. And surgeons that show liposuction where one image is a little bit smaller than the other one, and this is the fat before and this is the fat after, it's really not honest. It may be unintentional, but it's not honest. So photography is really important. So look at the quality of images. Get multiple consultations with doctors. Everybody's got their own approach. It's not just my approach. But look comprehensively so you don't make the wrong decision. You should not become the general contractor or architect of your own mouth, okay? You're going to employ your friend's dermatologist and your other friend's dentist and your other friend's plastic surgeon, and none of them are communicating. So we go back to your concept and what I've always believed in, as you know, the collaboration of a team of cosmetic specialists is always going to benefit the patient.
Yeah.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for being on the Aesthetic Insider Show. It's been amazing, and I really, really value everything that you've shared with our audience today. Thank you.
You are so welcome, and thank you for allowing me to have this platform to kind of share what my life has been like as a dentist and how I can hopefully help other of your other patients and other viewers that you have. And I promise every time I speak, I'll try to have something new and beneficial to you.
Dr. Rivkin, thank you so much for being the guest on the show today. And for those of you still with us, remember to watch next Wednesday for another exciting episode of The Aesthetic Insider.